Well, two famous men died on November the 22nd, 1963. The one in the most dramatic way possible, assassinated on the streets of Dallas in the full glare of publicity. The second in a much quieter way, dying in the upstairs room of his little home on the outskirts of Oxford, England. Obviously, John F. Kennedy's impact on the culture has been enormous, but I do wonder, now 50 years after their deaths, if C.S. Lewis's impact has not been even greater. At the time of his death, he was 65 when he died. Lewis's reputation was on the wane, but in the years since his death, there's been an extraordinary revival of Lewis, an extraordinary vogue he's enjoyed, as two generations now have discovered his literary criticism, his novels, but especially his very clever and very insightful Christian apologetics. Now, what explains Lewis's success as an apologist and an evangelist? I'd say, first of all, something in his personal story appeals to a lot of people today, because C.S. Lewis moved from dramatic non-belief to belief. He was born and raised a Christian, but had kind of lost his faith by the time he entered the university. And so he had to go through a very painful, halting, anguished struggle from non-belief to belief. He was not someone for whom religious faith came easily or readily. He had to battle his way to it. And I think that makes him very appealing to a lot of folks today who are going through the same kind of struggle and trial. But there's a second reason why C.S. Lewis was so effective as an evangelist, and that was he came at Christianity primarily as a literary figure rather than as a philosophical figure. Now, I want to be careful here because Lewis certainly was a very smart man and knew philosophy and used it sometimes very creatively in his apologetic work. Look at parts of Mere Christianity, or look at his discussion in his book on miracles. So he did know how to use philosophy. Nevertheless, he was primarily a man of letters. Keep in mind, his first published works were works of poetry, his own writing. And then in his professional life as a professor at Oxford and Cambridge, he was a specialist in 16th and 17th century literature. In fact, one of his really great books is a treatment of Milton, the poet. And I think it was this literary approach that enabled him to see something of tremendous importance. Namely, that Christianity is primarily a story. It's a narrative. It's the narrative of these great things that God has done from creation through the choosing of a people, Israel, through the sending of the Messiah and the achievement of salvation. Certainly, abstract doctrine can be distilled from the biblical story. And that's really much of what theology is. I've spent most of my life studying that distillation. But Lewis intuited correctly that fundamentally, at bottom, Christianity is a great story. The way he would put it is it's a story of creation, which is good, sullied by sin, and now restored through the return of the rightful king. That's the narrative rhythm, if you want, of Christianity. And once you see that, you see it everywhere in C.S. Lewis's writings. Again, look at Mere Christianity, one of the real masterpieces of Christian apologetics. There he sees precisely this rhythm. We don't have a dualistic view of good versus evil. You have a good creation, which has become compromised. But it's through the return of God as the rightful king that the world is set right. That's why he says, it's a line I've always savored, that the Christ child appears so quietly and clandestinely in this little outpost of the Roman Empire because he had to slip quietly behind enemy lines. That's ingredient in this fundamentally narrative understanding of Christianity. Look at it, too, in the wonderful and much celebrated Narnia Chronicles. In that fantasy story, Narnia is a fundamentally good place, but it's come under the thrall of the White Witch, who's now reduced it to a permanent wintertime. How is it restored? Well, through the return of Aslan, this great lion, who's the Christ figure, who gives his life that the land might be restored. What is that but the story of the return of the king? And then bring it down to a much more kind of pedestrian level, the wonderful Screwtape Letters. telling the story of how a very ordinary Christian is tormented by a low-level devil. What is that but the story of this conflict, this spiritual conflict? What gives Lewis the confidence to mock the devil in that book is his confidence that Christ has already won this great battle. So in all his writings, you can see the same rhythm. By the way, you see the same thing in Tolkien. As well known, Lewis and Tolkien were both members of this writers group called the Inklings that met on a very regular basis for a couple of decades. They read their works to each other. And Tolkien, too, saw this same rhythm, where you have now a fundamentally good Middle Earth, but under the influence of Sauron, this dark power, symbolic of the devil. And then you have the return of the king, Aragorn. It's through the return of the king and his conquest of the dark powers that the land is renewed. Not to mention, as I've argued before, Frodo is a symbol of Christ the priest, just as Gandalf is a symbol of Christ the prophet. And there's Aragorn the king. Now see, what both these men were doing, and Lewis, I mean, very much here, they were trying to evangelize the imagination. They wanted to prepare the imaginations of their readers for the reception of this great story of Christianity. That's why something I find wonderful and very moving, that in the last, 10 years or so, the most popular movies in the world are the movies based upon Lord of the Rings and the Narnia Chronicles. Stories that were invented by these Danish Christian gentlemen in the back room of a pub in Oxford, these stories have become the most popular films in the world. That can only be described, it seems to me, as a triumph of evangelization, but in this beautifully surreptitious way. That's, I think, part of C.S. Lewis's legacy. You know, something that the postmodern philosophers talk about a lot is the fact that you don't really convince people by out-arguing them. Argument is kind of going through a tough period right now. You conquer a position by out-narrating it. What we have is, in other words, competing narratives. Think of communism as a great narrative, or even capitalism as a great narrative. How do you battle an opposing narrative, like secularism, for example? You have to out-narrate it. You have to tell a better story, a more compelling story. I think what C.S. Lewis knew in his bones was Christianity is the greatest story ever told. And that's despite all of the excesses and sins of Christians up and down the centuries. We all know about that. Lewis knew about it. He knew about his own weakness personally. Nevertheless, Christianity is the greatest story ever told. C.S. Lewis told it with a particular verve and bravado and incisiveness and panache. And because of that, it's altogether well and good that we celebrate him on the 50th anniversary of his death.